So today's Shaila is as follows. There is a situation where someone had an Airbnb or a Swimply, the type where you rent someone's pool. This took place in Eretz Yisrael. And when the individuals, the family that came to rent the pool, so the host was present and was showing the family around how the pool works, how the jacuzzi works, where the bathroom is, and some snacks for them. And while the host was showing them around, he noticed from the family that was visiting, he said, your kids are jumping in the pool. There's no one supervising them. He said, no, not to worry. Don't worry. Just show me around. It's fine. Their older brothers will take care of them and everything's okay. Yeah. Now, so the host is busy showing around. He's keeping a watchful eye at the kids playing around the pool. And then suddenly he sees one of the kids begins to drown. So the host doesn't waste a moment and he jumps into the pool. And quickly saves the young boy, takes him out, everything barks from fine. He caught him right on time, nothing, no need for anything, serious medical attention. And he comes out of the pool, he's drenched, he was wearing all eight begadim, if you will, this week's parsha, and his, sopping wet, his shoes, that all dries, but his phone is broken. And his wallet, he had some cash and some checks, which are all ruined. So that was the scenario. So the host said, listen, I just saved your son. Could you at least just get me the new phone? I lost my phone, a couple hundred dollars. And the cash I lost, you owe me the money. So the individual says, I don't owe you any money. You have an obligation. There's a mitzvah to save someone. The kuach nefesh is a mitzvah, the raisa, to help save another person, another Jew. And you did that. You're performing a mitzvah. I have an obligation to pay you. And even if you want to say that the one who gets saved is supposed to pay for being saved any of the loss of money, well, go after my son then. It wasn't me. It was him. Take the 7-year-old boy to court. That was the scenario. So sad, good ending, funny ending, but that was the question that was posed to the Beis Din. So there are two components here we're going to go through. Number one is, what obligation is there to pay out of pocket the cost when a person is saved? Is he responsible to pay for any loss of money? That's Aleph. And Beis is, what type of responsibility does a father have towards his son? Does a father consider benefiting from his son being saved? Of course, he wants him to, you would hope. But what type of financial benefit obligation might there be, if at all, on the father? So those are the two questions. So let's hold off. 7 years old. Let's hold off now. So take a look inside on page number one. This week, I hope rectify what I did last week. This week, I think the marmakomas are clear. I think in order, nothing missing, right side up. So take a look at number one, the Gemara Sanhedrin daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. And the Gemara tells us here in the brackets as follows. Gufa, minayin leroes chavero shu tovea benahar. How do we know when a person witnesses, observes an individual who's drowning, ochaya garaso, or is being attacked by a wild animal, a liston bonalav, or some robbers, bandits are busy attacking him, a mob is attacking another Jew. How do we know in all these instances and anything like this that there's a chiv to save him? A person should not stand and watch his friend's blood be spilled. And therefore, whenever you have the ability, the wherewithal to save someone from any of these situations or the like, one has a mitzvah deraisa, or really a lav, not to, of lo samod adam riecha. That's the source. Asks the Gemara, v'ha mehacha nafka? Is this really the source from here? Mehosam nafka, from over there, there's yet another source that proves this point. Why do we need two psukim teaching the same point? Where else do we see a makor for pikuach nefesh? Avedas gufa benayim. The context of this drasha is, we know, of course, there's a mitzvah deraisa of hashavas aveda. Person loses an object, you have an obligation to return the object to the rightful owner. Asks the Gemara, how do you know if a person's a guf, the person's body or neshama, is being lost? There's obligation to save that person. Oh, so in essence, pikuach nefesh, saving a lost soul, which can be many different things, but at least in a physical sense, how do you know saving a lost soul is also a mitzvah? Vashevosolo, to return him himself, not only his object, not only his property, but himself. So we have two different psukim, all indicating that there's a mitzvah deraisa to save someone. One is lo samud adam riecha, and the other one is vashevel salo. So why do you need both psukim? So the Gemara answers, imi hasam, had we had that pasuk alone, vashevel salo, I would have thought, hani mili benafshei, that you have to save him with yourself, with your body, whatever you're capable of doing. If a person could swim and save him, great. If you can't swim, then you have an obligation. If you could fight off the lion that's attacking him, begufo, you should do so. If you can't, there's no obligation. But aval mitrach umigar agure emelo, but to be matriach and to hire professionals or to pay some people to go ahead and save the person, to hire doctors if a person is chola lo aleinu, to hire a professional lifeguard to jump in and get him from the river. How do you know you should have to pay out of pocket? So had we had only one pasuk, I would have thought the obligation of mine is only to use whatever I could do physically. But to pay out of pocket, that would not be a part of my obligation. Kamash Malan, from the second pasuk, there's also an obligation to pay out of pocket to help save a person. Okay, fine. Now, is an obligation for the one being saved to have to now reimburse the one who saves him? If a chola, let's say, a person is ill, and a doctor comes, and or someone hires a doctor, pays a doctor a lot of money to save him, does now the patient who's healed, does he have to pay the person who spent the money on him? Or any of these cases, any money spent or lost to save a person, does the one being saved need to reimburse? So look what the Rush writes. The Rush writes here in page number 2, this is on that same Gemara. He quotes Gemara, and it picks up in the brackets there as follows. The Hanitzel, the one who saved, Chayiv lefroa lematzil mashehotzi. The one who is saved has an obligation to reimburse, to pay back the one who saved him. The ein adam mechuyev lehatzil nefesh v'chaver b'mamona heichad he'islei mamona lenitzel. There's no obligation on the one who's saving to use his own money if the one nitzel has his own money. I mean, when the Gemara says paying out of pocket to save someone, it means with the expectation to get paid back. That was the understanding of the Rush. Not to pay the money and then never see it again. No, to get paid back from the Nitzal. And he has an interesting raya, the Rush says. There's a din of Rodef. Rodef is, if Reuven is a Rodef, chasing after Shimon, who's a Nirdaf. Reuven's trying to kill Shimon. So Reuven's called the Rodef, and Shimon's the Nirdaf. Now let's say while the Nirdaf is running away from Reuven, he knocks some Kalim over and breaks the vessels and other property. Does the Nirdaf have to pay the damage? He was saved in the end of the day. So the Gemara says that the Nirdaf breaks the kalim of the Rodef, he's Pater. Reuven's trying to kill him. Shimon could take all the kalim and throw them at Reuven, Reuven's own kalim. Shimon does not need to pay him back. But let's say Shimon takes Levi's kalim and throws them at Reuven, the Rodef. Then the Gemara says you have to pay back Levi. Levi wasn't part of the Rodef, who's he's a murderer, so you don't have to pay him back. But someone else, a third party, who I use his property to throw things and break, I would have to pay back. So based on this, we see that even though Shimon was saved, he was saved from Levi's kalim, he still has to reimburse Levi. So too, when someone, even on that case, that was against Shimon's Levi's will, but when Levi willingly goes ahead and saves Shimon and breaks his own kalim, uses whatever money he uses, Shimon has an obligation to reimburse Levi. And that's the raya brought down by the Rush. Now, what's interesting is, if you take a look in page number 3, the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat Hilchos Shmiras HaNefesh, which talks about the halachas of saving someone else, it's entitled Chayv Adam LaHatzil Es Chavero, that a person has to save someone else, Bein Begufo, Bein Bemamono. I'm reading like the title of the text. And it goes on to explain, if you see someone drowning, you see someone being attacked by a mob or by animals, you have to save them, even pay money. But the Shulchan Aruch never says that the one saved has to pay back, to reimburse the one who saved him. He doesn't mention it at all. Sounds like the Shulchan Aruch does not hold to the Rush. He takes the Gemara at face value that Levi has to save Shimon from Reuven, or Levi has to save Shimon from whatever it is and use money, and Shimon does not have to pay back Levi. That's what it sounds like when you read the Shulchan Aruch at face value. But if you take a look in the right side, the Miris Hanayim, known as a Sma, the Sma writes in the brackets, V'kosav HaRush, V'kosav HaRush V'atur, the Rush and the Tur, father and son. Besimenze, mihu im yesh lo mamon, if you have mamon, lahatzil atzmo, chayv l'sham l'chavero. That if he has money, so you have to pay back the one who saved him. V'hevi harush raya l'davar. And the Rush brings the raya that you have to reimburse the one who saved you. U'me'atema, it's a strange thing, it's a big wonderment. She'shmitu ha'mechaber u'mareinu harama. It's a strange thing that the Mechaber and the Ramah did not mention this halacha. He doesn't know why. The Sma ends in the Tzarech In. I don't know why the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that the Nitzel should have to pay back the Matzil. The Sma throws up his hands. Well, the whole question is again. I'm sorry, I want to keep. So you now go to the left side, the Shach. The Shach says, what do you mean? Kvar kasu marenu harama, b'yordaya simin reish nun bay, so sif yud bay. We'll look at it in a second. B'haga, the Rama that writes b'shem Mordechai, he quotes such a din. So let's see. So it wasn't mentioned in Chosha Mishpah because he already mentioned in Yardaya. The Rama doesn't always repeat things in different areas. So if you look at the next page, page number 4, here we're now in Chelek Yardaya, talking about Pidyon Shvuyim, the obligation to pay money for saving people who are Pidyon Shvuyim. And the Shulchan Aruch writes there in the circle, Yud Beis, Ha'av Chayiv Liftos as Aben. A father has the obligation to redeem his son from captivity. I Islei La'av, if he has money, V'lesh Le'i Le'ben, and the Ben has no money, the next person who has to pay out of pocket would be the father. The Rama adds, Haga, Hu Adin Karov, Acher Karov, Karov Kodem, so to any other relative, it goes in order of the closest relatives have a financial obligation to save, and then it goes further and further. It's not fair that a family should stay wealthy and make the tzibur pay for their relative who's in captivity, so it falls on first the closest of relatives to have to pay for it. Okay, that's just the background. Says the Rama, hapodech haveiro min hashivya, a person who redeems someone from captivity, chayiv l'shalim lo, the one who saved has to pay back his podeh, the one who saved him, he has to pay back. Im islay l'sham, if he has money, that's the din. So this is where the Rama mentions it. He's talking about pidyon shvuyim, the one who saved from captivity, which in essence is like pikuach nefesh is perhaps even greater. But if a person has to pay back for being redeemed from pidyon shvuyim, kal v'chomer, or at least huadin, he should have to pay back the one who saved his life. If he was drowning, if he was being attacked by a mob or animal, whatever the case may be. And the Shach says this is where the Rama brings the halacha. And that's the din. So if we were to stop the discussion right now, the shaila right here, I'm going to hold off to the end. If we stop the shaila right now, what would happen would be is as follows. The din would be that the father should have to pay for the individual who lost his wallet and money and his phone because he saved him. Now, here it's a bit different because it's not the father who was saved, it was the son who was saved. So the matzil, the one who saved the host of their house, in this case, is owed money. The question is, who owes the money? Is the child who owes the money because the child was saved, in which case you can't really extract money from a 7-year-old boy, or does the father have to pay for his child's financial obligations? So now this gets into another question. Beautiful. Now I'm going to keep it flowing. Hold off. So now there's a fascinating discussion as follows. The din is, what happens? What type of obligations does the father have towards the son? The Rishonim talk about the following scenario. We'll read this inside in a second. I'm going to read this outside first. Say it outside. Let's say a Rebbe decides to take your son and teach your son. He doesn't make arrangements to get paid with you at all. He teaches your son extra hours, and the Rebbe wants to get paid, but he didn't make this arrangement. Does the father have to pay the Rebbe for teaching his son? Is that needed or not? So if you look at the Mordechai in page number 4 in the bottom here, the Mordechai was asked something similar to this. Sheilas laharam, Baal Bayis Shamar Limelamed. Now this is a little bit different, where the Baal Bayis, the father said to a Rebbe, Lamed bini, teach my son. Lo nader lo kum, didn't tell him anything. I'll tell you personally, as a rabbi myself, people oftentimes ask to learn thee. But they don't always say, I also need to get paid. People think rabbis, time is free sometimes. So I need to know what type of arrangement it's in. But it's very uncomfortable to make learning, teaching into a monetary thing. So if a person doesn't mention money, I won't say yes. If he makes from the beginning, I want to make an arrangement with you, then it's already a different story. Because you get into a pickle sometimes where you expect something, but you don't know if it's going to really be there. So this situation, the father says, could you teach my son? He wants to get a freebie. So what happened was, he didn't make an arrangement beforehand. Ula'achazman. And afterwards, the father said, I'm not paying you. I didn't make an arrangement. You were doing a chesed, right? Rav Moshe writes, just like this ma'isek safim, they give a tenth of your time for money, a tenth of your money to anim. You should give a tenth of your time as a Rebbe to teach people who need. So he said, yeah, listen, you were doing me a chesed. I didn't say I'm going to pay you. The heishiv responded back, Shitzarach litein la. Lefiyazman, you have to pay me, shalamad. Hein rav hain mad. I spent time. This is my profession. This is what I do. I'm a Rebbe. You should owe me money. Whatever the going rate is for a tutor, you should pay me. So what's the din in this case? So the Mordechai Paskin's veneer You have to pay. Why? Datam de lo gara miyored l'steh chavero shlo bishus. There's a din, slightly different topic. Let's say the gardener decides to, you know, sees your grass is very long. I'm going to do the guy a favor. I'm going to start mowing the grass for him. And then he sends you a bill in the mail. Is that the right thing to do or not? The din is, it's a strange thing. And it's going to require much more understanding and parameters. Don't ask questions about it. But the din is, if a guy does something to your property and enhances it, you actually owe him money. Even though he did it against your will, how much money do you have to pay him? Is that really the right thing? Maybe you liked your grass really long. But without getting into those details, if a person gives you something to benefit from, so the din is you have to pay for it, even though it's against your will. Just accept it as a given right now. So therefore, the father, the Aviyah Ben, has to pay the Rebbe. Now, the Ramah brings this Mordechai as one opinion in the Shulchan Aruch. But then there's another opinion of the Rajba. If you look at the Rajba, the next page, the truth of the Rajba was asked a different question. I'm not going to go through all the details. I wanted to read this one line of the brackets there in the left column. He says, Od Shem Hamelamed Ben Chaveir, one who teaches the son of his friend, so someone's son, Shalomidasa Av, without the father's consent. I mean, the previous case was with the father's consent. Here's without the father's consent. Ein Ha'av Chayv L'Sham Lov, there's no need to pay. The Rebbe took the boy extra, and afterwards he sent the bill to the father. Father said, I never made an arrangement with you. I don't have to owe you any money. Who gave you the right? And he goes on to bring a raya that a person who's moder hanaf, by that time I make a nether, that I can't get hanaf from this Rebbe. So the Rebbe can't teach me. But the Rebbe could teach my son. That's not called hanaf. What comes out from this machlokas is, does the Aviyah Ben, does the father, does he get benefit when his son is being taught or not? So the Mordechai says, yes. If my son's being taught, I'm benefiting. That's an extension of me. That's part of my responsibility. Of course I'm benefiting. Of course I need to therefore pay for the benefit to the Rebbe. The Rajba says no. The Gemara Nedarim says, only I can't get Hana, but my son can get Hana. That's not my Hana. That's not my against my nether. And therefore, there's a very fundamental machlokas in the Rishonim. Does the father get Hana when the Rebbe teaches his son or not? And there are two opinions in the Ramah. So one opinion says, we'll hold off to the end. One opinion says that the Rebbe, in the case, again, the Mordechai's case was slightly different, but in a scenario where the Rebbe taught the son against the father's will, or the father not knowing, I should say. So it comes out from the Mordechai that the father would have to pay the Rebbe, even though he didn't know about it. And according to the Rajba, he would not have to pay for it. And it all hinges on, does that hana, is that called benefit? Does a father get benefit when a Rebbe teaches the son? That's the starting point. Now, there are a lot of questions you have on this. I'm not going to go through all the different details. This Rajba, one point for an example. The Ran says, the whole Gemara in the Nedarim, that when a person's moder hana from the Rebbe, that he's allowed to teach my son, that's not because it's not me getting hana. The Rebbe is a mitzvah. To teach children, that's a mitzvah. It's not related to hana elements. It's a different topic. I don't want to get too off in Nedarim. Either way, there are two different opinions in the Ramah. Now, in this Sefer, Choshen Lamaisa, he says this would be Talay. This question would be Talay in these 2 days. In other words, does a father benefit from the son being saved or not? Is that considered hana to the father? Would he have to pay for it? So if you assume that the father would have to pay the Rebbe because he's benefiting from his son learning, he'd have to pay from his son being saved. But if you assume that the father would not have to pay a Rebbe who teaches his son without consent, so too he would not have to pay for the son being saved. That's the Ad Khan, that's where we'd stop. We're going to challenge that in just a moment, but that's where we stand at this very moment. Now, we know there are two different opinions, and we have a klal. When it comes to Hilchas Choshen Mishpat, that you can always say, Kimli, I hold like this opinion, I hold like that opinion. In other words, wherever the money stands, who's ever trying to extract money, I hold like the other opinion. So right now, if we were to stop here, the owner of the house says, I want the money. The father, Aviyah Ben, says, I hold like the opinion that I wouldn't have to pay the Rebbe. It's not hana to me, so I don't have to pay you. Even though it was my son, I don't have to pay you. I can hold on to that sheet. As long as it's a sheet that brought down in Shulchan Aruch and by major poskim, I could cling to that until you bring me a raya otherwise. But until you bring me a raya otherwise, a motzi mechavei alav raya, it stands, the money stands where it is, and we not have to pay any money if we stop right now. Now, there are three, wait till I want to finish this now, we're going to get the flow. There are three svaras, however, brought down why the Aviyah Ben should have to pay. One opinion is mitzad halacha itself, understanding this particular sugya. The whole discussion before about the Rebbe and the Melamed was talking about a financial obligation. Pikuach nefesh is already a whole nother level. And he brings rayas from here. We saw the Shulchan Aruch earlier by we're kofin, the father, to redeem the son. If the son is held in captivity and the son has no money and the father does have money, we force the father to pay out of pocket. And the Gra brings a raya, the source of this, that if a father, had to sell his daughter, Chas v'Shalom, as Amma Ivriya, to be a maidservant, we read a few weeks ago in Parashat Mishpatim. And then the father, he does it because he doesn't have money. He doesn't do it because he wants to get rid of his daughter, obviously. And let's say he makes it big in the stock market. We make him redeem his daughter from the Amma Ivriya, take her out. It's a pagam in the Mishpacha. It's a terrible thing to have a daughter sold as a servant, as a slave. So if that's true, we force him to redeem the Pidyon Shvuyim and the Amma Ivriya, Kal v'Chomer, Pikuach Nefesh. We have to pay out of pocket the father. So even though, that was when we try to make the money to make it happen to create the Pidyon Shvuyim, here, the Hatzalah happened first, and then afterwards we're trying to make him pay and reimburse, even that instance, it would seem, when it comes to these halachas of Pikuach Nefesh, it would be on the father's obligation and responsibility to pay for it. That's one svar. It's based on the halacha. The other two is not really the halacha in this point, but it's general concepts, which is as follows. Apparently, this particular case was where the guests in the pool were not religious, and the host, other way around, the guests in the pool were religious, and the host were not. And it would be a terrible chil Hashem if the religious father is not willing to pay for saving his father. It's some money, saving the son. So because the chil Hashem shebo would be another reason why we'd make the Aviyah Ben pay for it. And then lastly, two more points. One is he says, it's already the minhag that's understood that if a person had to pay out of pocket an ambulance or a doctor to save someone's child, of course we're making the parents pay for it. Even if you could prove halacha otherwise, the minhag is certainly that the parents will pay for the medical costs of their son being saved. And then finally, he says, even if you don't like any of these answers, Beis Din should enforce lifnim mishras hadin. Even though if you want to prove mitzad halacha, you want to prove that the father's off the hook. It's a child who is saved, the child has to pay, and you can't take money out of a seven-year-old child. In the end of the day, Beis Din, if they get involved, they should encourage, almost force, because lifnim mishras hadin, the father should be paying for the losses to save his son, and that's where we stop. So leave a couple of minutes for questions now. You got some questions I saw? Hands up? Yeah.